Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Dear friends, I have spent decades studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife communications, and in the process, I have assembled a detailed picture of what happens at and after death. My guest today has studied death using a different set of data, and the similarities and differences in our conclusions are really fascinating. I love his book. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is a clinical psychologist, Dr. Roy L. Hill. Now, Roy has done something which I think is simply brilliant. He has used intensive study of near-death experiences in the same way that afterlife researchers use communications from the dead to construct a way to describe the death process, heaven, the divine, and the way that we should be living our lives today. His conclusions and mine are generally very similar. I actually was fascinated to see that. The reason why they might differ here and there is something we'll talk about today, and there is a reason. But his book, Psychology and the Near-Death Experience, I'll say it again, Psychology and the Near-Death Experience, it's kind of a mouthful. His book is wonderful. I recommend it to everyone. Welcome, Roy. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you very much, Roberta. I'm really glad to be here today.
I love that you used near-death experiences. I think one of the few things everybody knows about now that's related to this field is near-death experiences. This is the first area of substantial afterlife evidence that's really been sort of mainstreamed, especially in the United States. And what's great is it's a gateway drug to understanding so many things. As you brilliantly point out in your book, it's a start at really understanding so many things people have no way to understand otherwise. So I love the whole concept of near-death experiences. I haven't studied them as part of my work, primarily because people who are having a near-death experience, by definition, don't complete the death. And usually they're in the middle of some sort of crisis, health crisis or something like that, which makes the experience substantially different from a completed death. And we'll sort of talk about the ways that's true and how to make sense of it all, because it all fits together perfectly. But first, tell us a little about your background, Roy. What got you into this?
Well, Roberta, I was raised in a very scientific household. My father is a physicist. My mother is a geologist. And
are they still speaking to you?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay. So my father is a physicist. My mother is a geologist. And I'm a psychologist. So I was raised in a rather scientific household. So I was rather skeptical of a lot of these types of enterprises of thinking. That all changed when I was working at a prison. I had an inmate on suicide watch, and he suddenly became better after he heard from his recently deceased sister.
Okay, good.
And so when I talked to him further, he said that his sister was telling him that he shouldn't be on suicide watch, grieving for her in this way, that he was not using his time wisely, and that everything was going to be okay.
So siblings never change, do they? They always, especially if she's an older sister, they're always bossing around the other kids. Isn't that great? So get back to life is what she said.
She says, get back to life. And so I took the inmate off watch because I didn't believe that he was hearing the type of voices that is common among schizophrenics and other people with psychotic disorders, because those voices are usually negative and cryptic. This voice was very complicated in its contents, very positive and helpful. But that's not what schizophrenics hear.
Right.
So I talked to him the next day off watch, and I asked him if he was hearing anything more from his sister, and he said yes. And he says that she wants to tell you something, and that is that you don't believe. And so you shall believe. She has a message for you. And, of course, I was getting goosebumps at that point. And I says, well, what is she saying? He said, quarter. I said, quarter? Quarter's a coin or quarter or something?
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know. I'll ask. So he sits there quietly communing with the deceased. And he says, quarter the coin. And I said, well, what does that mean? He says, I don't know. So anyway, he left, and another inmate came by, and he was a white Muslim of all things and not running with the other guy at all. And he was ranting about the U.S. and so forth and the hypocrisy of the U.S. from his perception. And he asked me, do you know what's written on a quarter? And I said, in God we trust. And then it dawned on me. He says, wow, nobody's ever asked that prior or since. And so, of course, I talked to the other guy, and he was surprised as well. I says, is there anything else he said to you? He said, well, he says that your wife is pregnant, you're going to have a son, and it'll be born on Christmas Day. Well, the first two I knew were true, but perhaps he was a lucky guesser or something or heard something. So the crux of it was it going to be born on Christmas Day? Well, it was born on January 7th.
Uh-huh.
It bothered me for 11 years because the rest of it seemed so true. I thought about it. This is a test of faith. One is a declaration I didn't have faith, and two is a declaration I should have faith. And I thought, well, maybe this is a test of faith. So on a test of faith, I Googled Christmas Day, January 7th, knowing that Christmas Day is December 25th. And, of course, things came up for me on the Internet, and I found out that Christmas Day on the Gregorian calendar, the Christian calendar.
Right. Very That's seventh. Right. Yes. It's the 7th, right?
It is the 7th. So indeed, he was born on Christmas Day. It just took me 11 years to find out. And after that, I became, first of all, I realized that my traditional Baptist training wouldn't explain this. Their interpretation would be this would be some sort of satanic influence.
That's right.
Yeah. So I thought, well, this is clearly not a satanic influence, but a messenger from God from this deceased sister. So that was a revelation. I knew about near-death experiences from Dr. Moody's book and had some interest already, but I had a voracious appetite. And through that, I became more and more interested, started writing notes, and then I started contacting Jody Long, the Longs, and they encouraged me to write a book. Jody Long in particular, and here I am.
And you say, this is a direct quote, you say, I believe the teaching death does not exist has become my mission and the purpose for writing this book. Now, Roy, if I were to talk about the meaning and purpose of my life, I would say, I believe the teaching death does not exist has become my mission too. So we're kindred in that as well. But I'm sure you have a better understanding now that this is probably what your life's mission was. All these different things that happened in your life took you to this point, and now you are one of many people who are teaching in all different ways what's actually true. And welcome to this exciting field. I have to tell you, it's the most fun there could possibly be.
I couldn't agree more.
One of the things I want to do is orient us. Now, people who, and this is primarily for listeners, because I think you understand some of the differences, but the listeners might not. With a near-death experience, someone has usually had a bodily crisis, although not always. Sometimes the body's not in danger of dying. They leave their body, and they go to, and they have an extraordinary experience, which usually involves what appears to be heaven and appear to be wonderful beings around them and dead loved ones and all kinds of great experiences that transform their lives. Don't you agree, Roy, that the main thing that unites near-death experiences is that life transformation? They see things so differently afterwards?
Absolutely, Roberta. When people who have near-death experiences meet spiritual beings, Jesus perhaps, God, one of the most profound revelations they have is that love is the center of the universe.
Right.
It was within the fabric of the universe.
Right.
And they realize that they are loved unconditionally and that they have great value, that their life has great value, and that they have a mission in their life. And the mission is in some way or form related to learning how to love. And that could be through a variety of ways. Love is actually a very complex set of skills.
I should tell you, Roy, that that's exactly what the dead tell us is the meaning and purpose of our lives, learning to love perfectly as God does and learning to forgive completely, which is the same thing Jesus said. So effectively what these people are getting is this message from a fresh perspective that seems not to have existed before maybe the 60s when we started resuscitating many more people than we had been able to before. But it's a transforming experience. PMH Atwater has told me that many people who have NDEs also have more profound changes, bodily changes, and you've hinted at that in your book as well. They're cured of diseases. Some of them become psychic who never were before. So this is I just want to emphasize, this is a big, major, extraordinary experience. And the fact that we are getting them now and getting so many of them, and they're also wonderfully evidential, is literally a gift from God. These people haven't died, so let's try to understand what the differences are between what we learn from them after their near-death experiences and what we learn from people who have completed the trip. I wrote this down, thinking about how we were going to talk, Roy. I wrote this down quickly. With death, I think most people who, certainly if they've read my books, they know in our life plan, we plan in 2, sometimes 3 exits that our higher consciousness can take. And some of those exits involve accidents. So virtually all completed deaths are planned. It's possible for there to be an accidental death. And of course, suicide is never planned, but virtually all of them are planned. And when people have a planned death, there's a very careful process that starts before the death. There's a lot of sort of similarity. There's a structure which is fairly dependable, but it's very, as you point out with NDEs, it's very, very personal to each person how that death is going to unfold. However, near-death experiences are much more varied. Some of them incorporate a huge number of kinds of events. They're extraordinary in they seem to go on forever, even though they were 2 minutes, perhaps, in terms of the body. And some of them are fairly simple. They don't even involve seeing someone, but they all seem to have in common, don't you think, Roy, this being in a place of ultimate love, this being enveloped in love and safety and peace. Don't you think that's what unites them all, too?
Yes, that's one thing that unites them. And that's why people who return are very much transformed, because they felt the love. They understand that love and interconnection, if you will, that we're all very much interconnected, is of incredible importance. If I may go back to something else you said, you mentioned that deaths are planned. And what people who near-death experiences, what they learn is that they're very old. Eternity goes in both directions.
Right.
And so they understand that their life was pre-planned.
Yes.
Their birth, their death, and the missions that they are tasked to accomplish.
Right.
And so people...
And they're told it's not your time to be here. You got to go back and finish the book, right? Finish the trip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so many people who have near-death experiences don't want to come back.
Yes.
And it's, I find it ironic that people here on Earth fight death so much. They're so afraid of it.
Because of the ignorance that is pervasive. Yeah,
exactly.
That's right. Here's the second difference. Mm-hmm. Many near-death experiences include religious details. I mean, the ones that you report certainly do, but some of them, there's a book, Heaven is for Real, and it was of a child. And boy, did they put on a show for that kid. Amazing, the war between good and evil, there's the throne, all of that. That's common with near-death experiences, especially of people who are religious. By contrast, there is, I have never read in hundreds and hundreds of them any repeated death description in which there was anything religious. All those religious symbols are just gone when it's a completed death. And that to me is a pretty big difference, but I think I understand why it happens. Three, near-death experiences can include an embodied God. And you report quite a number of them. I had forgotten how often it does show up. Sometimes that God actually is a judge and says, all right, now tell us what you did with your life. They quote him, actually. The dead tell us pretty consistently that God never is embodied, never, ever takes on a body, and God never, ever sits as a judge. In fact, they say there's nobody who is a judge during a completed death, life review, or whatever is going on. This is a pretty big difference, but it ties into the religious symbols difference, which we'll go back to.
Right. Go ahead. Well, I just wanted to really answer that question or that point that you make. I think it's very critically important. The differences that you are pointing out are superficial. They're not really there.
That's right. That's exactly right. They're the veneer, which is part of, and you point out that all these things which seem so real that people are having, experiences they're having, vistas they're seeing, can appear and disappear instantly. So ultimately, are they real or not? But they certainly feel real, right, to the people who are experiencing them?
Well, the spiritual world is based on a different set of laws. I believe it's akin to something to quantum mechanics where
it is. You're right.
Thought basically manifests different things. So yes, it is real in a sense. It is real because it is truly there, but is manufactured by thinking. And really most near-death experiences, if they experience God, God is not embodied. God is experienced as a light in true form. There are rare instances, especially for people who are steeped in religion, that God is presented in different ways that can be understood by that person. So God accommodates where people are at from their point of view.
That's a very good point. That's exactly right. That was what... there are just a couple more I wanted to mention, and then I'll tell you what I think is the reason why, the conclusion I had drawn. Number four, of course, near-death experiences, by definition, always come back. Those who are undergoing a natural death, by the time they have the kinds of experiences that Roy wonderfully describes in his book, they're already dead. Their silver cord has been, which ties you to your body and keeps your body alive, that's been severed. So they don't ever, they step into the afterlife reception area or wake up in a home or something, and they don't have the option of going back. So, that's a difference. I mean, if you're seeing all of this beautiful stuff, and you're probably not dead yet because you haven't gone through the pre-death process. Because number five, deathbed visitors are a very important part of a natural death, and they usually start showing up within 24 hours of the death, but they show up well before the person leaves the body. Now, what Roy points out is that in a near-death experience, they're all around them in that area where they arrive, wherever that area is. Dead loved ones are there, guides are there, angels are there. If it's a natural death, that's likely to be happening in the hospital room or your bedroom or wherever you're dying. Number five, natural death. Oh, number six. There's a tunnel in many near-death experiences, although not in all, right, Roy? That's a commonly reported, but not
fairly common.
Yes,
not near as common as people may think, based on.
I know, because it's very, very individual. I've wondered about the tunnel because it never appears in a completed death description that I've ever seen. What seems to be the case is that the tunnel seems to be a kind of emergency wormhole that gets opened through the lowest negative dimensions of the afterlife levels. It seems to be you know, they, basically they hoover you up. The tunnel opens. There's nobody there around you to take care of you. They've got to get you to a safe place, so they hoover you to a higher vibratory level. And that's what the tunnel seems to be. I should just make one final point. The dead tell us that both near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences occur in an enormous astral area that is higher than the vibratory rate of the matter, of the earth, of the universe, but it's not the same place where the dead go. In fact, as you point out, very often the dead will come to a place and they'll be told, if you go any farther, it's a completed death, you won't be able to go back.
Yes.
So I guess what I'm saying is they're not in heaven, but they're in a heaven-like place where they're able to meet freely with their loved ones, with their guides, with all of these wonderful other figures who are helping them. And it definitely has the same feel as heaven. They tell us that over and over, the dead, the completed death people do. It's filled with the love of God, which is a totally different experience than really any of us who've not had one of these experiences can imagine. So those are the differences. Now, do you have any others that you could think to add, or what are your thoughts, Roy?
You know, I really believe the differences that you point out are maybe somewhat superficial. Yes, the spiritual beings are communicating with us from the other side, and they have fully transformed over. I believe there's a purification process that occurs with people who are finally dead. There's a number of near-death experience accounts where people learn that to be purified, they actually join with the source. God is an energy, that our soul is actually a part of God, that we're all bits and parts of God, but we are not God, of course.
I thought a lot about this because obviously I've noticed these differences, although not nearly as forcefully as you've helped me to see them with your book. This is what we're told by the dead happens. We're told that people who have near-death experiences are protected and nurtured especially carefully because they're going back. Nobody wants to disrupt their pre-existing beliefs. People who are there, who are helping us, want to reinforce whatever's positive about what their lives already had been, give them little corrections, and I would like to talk about some of those in your book, and send them off with the right attitude to wherever they're going. So that seems to be the difference. They seem to pull religious symbols from our minds to give us comfort. And we're also told by the people who have completed deaths that whenever they actually believe they're seeing God, and apparently usually also when they believe they're seeing Jesus, they're actually seeing very, very advanced beings playing those roles. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they tell us. In fact, you've got me curious. I do have a plant who lives on the sixth level. I'm going to ask him that question specifically. I wish I'd done it before this show, but I'll have it everyone next week because we're going to be talking next week with Mikey Morgan, whose son, Mikey Morgan, whose mother, Carol, will be with us. And Mikey lives on the sixth level, and he's happy to answer questions. But what do you think? Doesn't it make sense that what they're doing is sort of pulling from your own mind what will comfort you and what you need to sort of know, rather than putting you in an objective place, which is what happens when we actually die?
I agree with you in part. In part not, at least from what you're hearing. I do believe that Jesus is a real figure, as well as Buddha and others.
Oh, they are. No question about that. I have a book coming out this fall, in fact.
Yes.
No question.
So Jesus, I believe, in a sense, is a very powerful spiritual being. In fact, I think Jesus is who Jesus says to be.
Yes.
When you see in near-death experiences that angels actually obey Jesus, and which is seems to be an odd situation for a human soul to have that wield that type of power. And in fact, Howard Storm, when he had his near-death experience, he saw Jesus and asked Jesus, "Have you been to other worlds?" And he said, "Yes, I have been to every world at all times." And also along those lines, there's been a lot of people who have seen Jesus and came with very, very similar conclusions.
Now, there's no question Jesus is actually much more important than Christianity ever has allowed itself to think Jesus is. I have a book coming out in the fall precisely on this topic. Thank you for giving me a chance to plug it. And yes. So I'll talk more to my listeners about the whole role that Jesus actually plays as we get closer to that. But there's no question about that. And Buddha is apparently of the same elevated rank as Jesus. There may be others, too. I'm not sure about the rest, but those are the two names most commonly mentioned by the dead.
Yes, I do believe that there are some very advanced spiritual beings. There's different levels of heaven. I don't know what they are, but we're all very important. Even though there's all these differences in hierarchy, we all have equal value. You and I have equal value to each other and to Jesus in turn, because we're all a part of God. That doesn't mean that we have the same level of experience or spiritual maturity. Clearly, these beings have different roles than we do because of their advancement. But that doesn't really say anything about value. And I think that's really important to your listeners who struggle with poor self-esteem or thinking their lives don't matter very much. All our lives matter very, very much. And we're very old and we have eternity. So
yes, which is a long time,
yeah.
For sure. I hope that people listening will see how similar the conclusions about what's going on and about human nature are when someone simply looks at the near-death experience reports in detail, as it's similar to what I've assembled and have other careful after-death researchers using purely what the dead tell us. There's one truth, and we're all sort of triangulating in on what that is, and this, which is why I think, Roy, that your book is such a wonderful contribution, because it reinforces so much of what the dead have been telling us. And I want to talk more specifically about what's in his book, but first I should just pause and say, this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which talks about all the ways our dead loved ones communicate with us and we can communicate with them. You can learn more about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest today is Dr. Roy Hill, and he's a clinical psychologist and an expert on near-death experiences. His book is Psychology and the Near-Death Experience. It is a wonderful, interesting, entertaining read, and it shows us over and over again how important each of us is to what is really going on. We are part of God. I've talked about this before, but literally where there's one of us here, one being is here, and it's all of us. We're part of the Godhead. So when you understand that, as you point out, Roy, you can't have low self-esteem when you are part of God and you are infinitely loved. Each of us is God's best beloved child. So, you know, it's time to start really sort of living as if that's who we are, as opposed to sort of living from lack.
I agree. If there's anything I have to say that I really would like to hit home, it is that point.
Let's talk about one of the things here. I've copied out a number of the stories that you told. Actually, finishing on what you just said, you quoted Evan Alexander's guide when he greeted, no, she, it was a woman, right? When she greeted Evan Alexander and he had this extraordinary, of course, near-death experience, she said, "You are loved and cherished dearly forever. You have nothing to fear. There is nothing you can do wrong."
Yes.
I'm going to repeat that again because it's so important. You are loved and cherished dearly forever. You have nothing to fear. And here's an important one that most people don't think about enough. There is nothing you can do wrong.
Yes.
I thought that was really powerful.
It is powerful. And there's another near-death experience that I'd like to quote, where this person felt ashamed about the mistakes she made in her life. And I believe it was Jesus who told her, "That's okay, because God shines through your cracks."
I don't think I noticed that one. That's a great one. God,
I don't think it was in this book. But
oh, okay.
One that I did take note of. It's a beautiful.
God shines through your cracks.
That's right.
Beautiful.
And so really we're all here to help each other grow. In fact, the whole purpose, I think, of being on Earth is very central to this last point that you made of you can do no wrong. We're all advancing towards the source through eternity, but how do we learn? Up in heaven, we're interconnected with the source, and you probably see that through spiritual beings. So with that, we know time, past, present, and future. There's no conflict, there's no sickness, there's no death. And we are connected with the love of God and living in the bliss. Well, that's a great place to experience love. But it's not a great place to learn through our own free will all different types of experiences and to spiritually mature on our own by making mistakes. So I call this planet here Earth school Earth because that's what it is. We're here.
Yes, yeah. The dead
meant to make our mistakes.
The dead talk about the same thing. It's absolutely right. Sometimes, Roy, I tell people it's a little bit like a gym. Each of the big things that happen in their lives that are difficult or negative are actually like machines in the gym that we chose to strengthen a specific set of spiritual muscles.
Absolutely.
Dealing with a bad mother-in-law, having a child die, having all the things we think of as terrible, those are things we chose to have happen to us as opportunities to grow spiritually. Because, as you say, living in heaven is living in a spiritual hammock. It's too perfect there. We don't have the opportunity to grow the way we do here. Perfectly
yeah.
said. Thank you. Now, there's another woman who I really liked. You talk about her in your book. She was someone who, when she got there and really was made to understand what was going on, she said, I really have to go back. I wanted to come back because I understood that my consciousness at the time didn't mesh with the unconditional love that I was experiencing. She said, therefore, I knew that although it wasn't intended as punishment, I couldn't maintain that frequency that was allowing me to feel this bliss temporarily. Whoa, she's so wise. I knew that somehow I had to raise my vibration and become more loving in order to experience this indescribable love on a permanent basis. Brilliant. This woman knows exactly what's going on.
Yes. That was a very impactful statement. And I think it was a revelation not everybody receives.
No, but it's. I hope everyone will take that to heart. When you raise your spiritual vibration here, and there's an easy handbook, by the way, for raising your spiritual vibration. Just read the red letters in the Gospels on love and forgiveness. Buy a red letter Bible, any modern translation, read the red letters on love and forgiveness, and then internalize them and live by them. That's all you have to do. Whatever your religion is, doesn't matter. That's the surest handbook I ever have found, and I've been looking for how to live the most spiritually productive life and to evolve as rapidly as possible on this planet. Or do you have another idea for another book, Roy? How do you feel about it?
I believe Jesus was sent to here for us to emulate. It is God's way for us to know how to live as human beings. So really, I can't think of any book that supersedes the Bible, the New Testament. However, there are other excellent books, spiritual books. Probably the best book I have read on a near-death experience was written by a woman 700 years ago. In fact, it was the first book written in the English language.
What was that?
It was Julian of Norwich. Nobody knows her real name, but she was an abbess in England. She had a near-death experience in the 1390s, and she wrote this fabulous book, and there's so many wonderful insights. I could go on for an hour.
What's it called? If someone wanted to look that up, what's her book called?
Showings.
Showings?
Mm-hmm.
And her name again?
Her name is Julian of Norwich.
Julianne.
So it's it's the name of the abbey where she was. So nobody knows her real name.
Okay.
But she's documented in history, and there is outside documentation that she really existed.
Another of the things that you talk about is the fact that all is consciousness, and over again they're saying that. Now, this is something which we learn also from the communications from the dead, especially the more elevated dead. There is one consciousness, and we are all part of that consciousness. And we also learn it rather curiously from the great early 20th century physicist. This is for your dad. Was it your dad who's a physicist?
Yes.
Max Planck was the one who discovered that human consciousness actually is primary and must pre-exist the universe. They don't take seriously the fact that he said these things, but indeed he did. I don't have the sheet. Oh, yes, I do. Let's quote my dear friend Max. I just love him to pieces because he got the 1918 Nobel Prize in Physics as the father of quantum mechanics. This is a big shot physicist. In 1931, he said, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness." Thank you, Max. Isn't that wonderful?
Absolutely. In fact, there is some new information coming from the world of physics that really the universe is really a two-dimensional hologram.
Yes.
And if you think about quantum physics and that, really that basically sums up our existence. What truly is a light in an inky blackness, and which is God, and everything else comes from God consciousness, including our existence and everything we see around us. And so we're co-creators in this existence because we're part of God, that same God consciousness, what I've gleaned from near-death experiences.
Yeah, everything that exists is either God or an artifact of God. Nothing else exists.
Right.
And that's right. And isn't it wonderful that we come to this, even you with your scientific background? Boy, you got it in both ways. You have both the scientific materialist view, and then you've got the Christian view from your Baptist background.
Yes.
And what we're finding actually is that neither of those trusted institutions has told us what they really should have been telling us, or has been trying to learn what they really should have been trying to learn about what you and I are talking about. Makes me cranky, actually, because we've wasted, there's so many people who have wasted time, wasted their lives even, and come to death fearfully when it was just not necessary. There's nothing but good news for people who live even a halfway reasonable life.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about life reviews.
Okay.
You talk about a lot of their life reviews. The life reviews that you describe are similar in some ways to what the dead talk about having experienced after death. There are two things that happen when you die, just universally. You have a big party and you have a life review. Those are the two things the dead talk about. And the order seems to be just whichever they think is best for you. The life review usually happens in a room in a big stone building, and you're there with your guides, with your higher guides, sometimes with a person or two from that lifetime, and sometimes there is a council of elders along the wall, several very, very advanced beings behind a tall desk. So they look like judges. But the people who have been through this say they are not judges. In fact, they're there to help us feel comfortable, help us figure things out, help us move on. So that's setting the scene from the fully completed death evidence perspective. From the one that Roy describes, it's much more individual, don't you think, Roy? They not all of them even have life reviews, right? The people who have near-death experiences.
Well, that's a good question, Roberta, because when people come back with near-death experiences, most of them only remember bits and pieces. So we don't know the things that they are not allowed to remember, what is blocked.
Yes.
But there are a lot, about 30% of people have life reviews. And sometimes they have judges, so-called judges around them. I would say commentators would be better.
Yes.
And some do not. And sometimes it's Jesus. Sometimes it's an angel. Sometimes it's a family member. Sometimes it's just by themselves. And sometimes they don't have it at all. Sometimes it's in grand display that you're watching your life with 20 screens at once, and you comprehend all of it. Not only do you live your life, but more importantly, you experience how you affected other people from their point of view. So you're living their lives as well. And that's the ultimate teaching tool to learn empathy.
Yes.
To know what other people feel and think based on your behavior. And that's one reason why people are so transformed when they do return, especially those who have a life review. They really understand the impact that there's a tapestry out there, and that what they do affects people they don't even know across the tapestry. And so what we do here on Earth is very, very important in terms of helping each other grow towards the source.
Do they ever, are they asked to forgive themselves for things they've done wrong? Is that part of their life review, or is it more just used as counseling for them?
You know, those who feel really guilty, they will often say, these are just lessons. I love you unconditionally. You can't do wrong. These are things. One near-death experience is not in my book, but it's an important one. It was God who told her. It might have been Jesus. He said to her that you have DNA, you have biology, you have limited intelligence. Of course you're going to make mistakes. This is part of being human. If you didn't, you wouldn't be human. It's okay. It's here to learn these things. So the idea, you know, the traditional religious idea that we're all so sinful, and unless
that's right,
we do certain rituals, we're going to go to hell because we make a mistake. That's not echoed at all.
That's a crock. Let's be frank. It's absolutely untrue.
Right. Yeah. And even when people have Christian religious experiences, they learn that some of these Christian beliefs of hell and judgment are false. Do we have time where I can tell you one that's not in the book that I think is very enlightening? There was this person who had who was Catholic and thought if you were not Catholic, you were going to go to hell. So when he went to heaven, a big Catholic cathedral was manifest, which he expected, and people went into it. So he went into the cathedral, and the first thing he did was he beelined into confession, as a good Catholic would do.
Right.
He goes to confession, and this kind of hairy, dark arm goes out, right?
Oh, dear.
Like Middle Eastern arm. And he touches it and realizes it was Jesus. And he realized that he had nothing to confess. There was nothing to confess. And Jesus told him two things. Stop lying to other people and stop lying to yourself.
Wow. Wow. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's that's fascinating. I love that it was a hairy arm. It had to be that, right?
Yeah, it was a dark, dark, hairy arm.
Right.
It wasn't Catholic, Italian depiction of Jesus. It was more of the Middle Eastern view.
What happens in a completed death is a little different. It tends to be a somewhat more formal life review, and they spend a lot of time on it. Sometimes they go from the death point back, and sometimes they go from birth forward. It seems to be variable. In fact, my suspicion is that it goes backward more than it goes forward, which doesn't make sense to me, but that's okay.
Well, I've seen the opposite. I've rarely seen a backward one.
Again, because so many people die, and whether it's a near-death experience or someone who communicated in detail about his experiences, there's so few of those that we have to just sort of guess. But they're very often reported to go front to back. I'll have to ask Mikey that question too. Mm-hmm. But when we've been through it, we're asked in a completed death to forgive everybody in our lives. And mm-hmm. from everything that I have read, everybody forgives everyone. You killed my kids at Auschwitz, no problem. They forgive everyone because they understand this life on earth is just as you point out, it's a day in school, it's a game, it's not real. And all the people they love are just fine. And so forgiveness of others is really easy at your life review. The hard part is forgiving yourself.
Yes.
And because, as you point out, you get to feel how you made other people feel. And some of those who've gone through a life review say, it wasn't even the big things that were the worst and hardest for me to find a way to forgive, because I knew I had done this or that bad thing. But it was finding out how many times I had just hurt someone's feelings or put aside a chance to, I could easily have helped and I didn't, and I got to feel what the result was. That is tough. And having read enough of those to last a lifetime, I have to tell you, I cleaned up my act, Roy, big time.
I'm trying to do the same.
That's the main thing learning these truths does for us, isn't it? Makes us try to live really perfect lives because we want good life reviews.
Yes, that is a good motivator.
Is there anything you especially want people to know? The fact that it's all love and that we're here to love, that's one thing. Is there something maybe many people don't know about NDEs that we ought to know?
Well, I think we're hitting on the main points with the love and the self-value. The main, I guess one other thing I want to mention about the NDEs, you point out very early in the broadcast that people are having more of them. I believe there's a reason for it. This world of ours is in a very critical state.
Yes.
And I don't, one thing that's being communicated back from the other side is that the other side is not particularly happy with the way we're treating each other with through wars and the environment and the planet, and that really we're at a tipping edge. If we continue on our path, there's going to be destruction. And I believe what you're experiencing on your end with afterlife communications and what I'm writing about with near-death experiences, these are happening more frequently because God is trying to give us new information for a new age.
Yes.
And that message is we need to shift. We need to advance spiritually as a species. Otherwise, there's going to be dire consequences. Our technology is such that we can destroy each other and destroy our world. So our spiritual part needs to start catching up. We've been stagnated for too many years. And you pointed out religion is part of that problem. I value religion very, very much. The community and the prayer and the outreach and the charity, all those things are important, and finding a way to seek God. But religion is not the destination. God is the destination. And what NDEs are reminding us of that. We need to search out God. We need to search out who we're supposed to be in love. We need to work together to transform this world of ours.
That's beautifully said. And you're right. God is the source. God is both where we came from and where we're going. And most people don't have a sense, as you do, that in fact there has been an effort ongoing in this planet. I don't know when it started, but it's at least 15 or 20 years old now. Those who have died and report back to us from higher levels say that they're in the process of raising the consciousness of humanity on the planet, quite literally. Because if we don't do that, we are destined to destruction. In my book coming out in the fall, which is called Liberating Jesus, I talk quite specifically about what I've been told about this, and it's a little bit frightening, but they're working very hard to keep disaster from happening and instead bring the kingdom of God on earth, and that's eminently worth doing, but it's each of us has a role to play. So you're right, more near-death experiences, more productive communications. Mikey Morgan, who is a sixth-level being, last lived in the 1600s, voluntarily undertook a brief Earth lifetime. He was born in 1987, died in 2007, and only then did he let his mother know that she had agreed before her birth to help him teach through the veil to try to raise the consciousness of the planet. So this kind of thing is going on. I believe God is now making new revelation with regard to the Gospels, which I talk about in my book. So you're right. There are many, many people working all over the earth at the behest of their guides to raise the consciousness of the planet. And my guides tell me it's working. I can see it, Roy. When The Fun of Dying first came out, I would look out over a sea of blank faces this was 2010, just 5 years ago. I would look out over a sea of blank faces and stupid questions whenever I talked about these facts, these truths. Now, I rarely give talks at this point, but when I do, I'm seeing smiles, nods, the questions are brilliant. It's a different audience, different day, but so much growth is happening all over the world, certainly in Western countries. And we see people saying in response to surveys that they are less religious and more spiritual.
Yes. Which,
doesn't that suggest to you that's all part of this wonderful, vast process that you're a part of as well?
I agree. I am so thankful to God and gratitude that I'm part of this process. I've worked as a psychologist doing different things for the years, but I plan on devoting most of the rest of my life to this cause, as you have.
And together, and to quote my guide, Thomas, together we prevail. I believe he's right. Together we will prevail. This has been exciting to talk with you. As I say, I love your book. I urge everyone to think about reading Psychology and the Near-Death Experience, because it's easy to read. It's very enjoyable. But also, it gives you such a deeper understanding of just how precious we are, each of us, how infinitely we are loved. It's impossible for you to do anything to separate yourself even a little bit from the perfect love of God. And his book helps you understand that. How do people, this is available, of course, on Amazon and perhaps in bookstores, but what's your website? How would people sort of get in touch with you?
Yes, I do have a website. It's neardeathexppsy.com.
No punctuation, just neardeathexppsy.com. Okay.
That is correct. And you can find me on the NDERF website, on a bunch of other NDE-related websites to buy my book. But Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, Apple iTunes, those are good places to find it pretty readily. But if you want to send me a comment or question, my website is the best place to go, and I love to answer questions.
I do too. Every time someone sends me a question, I just thank them in my mind. I love this opportunity to make a new friend and to help people grow spiritually.
Yeah, it's all new to me. The book is just brand new. Just a few weeks ago has come out. So we're excited.
Roy, you're going to love this journey. The people that you meet, the things you're able to do to help people, I know what you mean. I thank God every day that I've been given the gift of being able to do this work. It's beyond wonderful. It's joyous.
Yes.
Well, I love having made a new friend in you as well. We're going to keep in touch. I want to hear about your journey. But we've come to the end of our time, I'm sorry to say. So I've got to say, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it is going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. And by now you know my two nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. You can find everything you need to know about my books or order my books through my website, which is robertagrimes.com. And I blog there weekly. Please read my blog. I love it when people comment on it. Our guest next week will be our dear friend, Carol Morgan. Now, Carol's son, Mikey, died unexpectedly in 2007. This turned out to have been his last planned exit point. He was only 20, but he was supposed to have died even younger. Only then did he let us know that he actually is a sixth level being. That's the level right below the source. And he had made a plan before his mother was born to come to Earth and have this brief lifetime so he could remember what it was like to be here, and so he could learn to relate to us as 21st century people. So he speaks directly to us exactly as if he's one of us. Plus, he learned to snowboard. His book is called, which is just going to be out in early October, it's called Flying High in Spirit, A Young Snowboarder's Account of His Ride Through Heaven. It is a fantastic book. Please don't miss our conversation with his mother next week. This week, we've been speaking with clinical psychologist Dr. Roy Hill, and he has done with near-death experiences what afterlife researchers have done with post-death communications, and he's come to the same conclusions, which to me is beautiful and brilliant. He's used reports from near-death experiencers to build a picture of death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives, to which all researchers that I know would absolutely wholeheartedly agree. So his book is exciting. I urge you to read it. Dear friends, it's time now for all of us to learn the truth about life and death for ourselves. You can read about it all day long, but until you really internalize it, or I can talk to you every week and try to get you to understand and believe, until you internalize it for yourself, it's not going to help you. It's only going to be when each of us prove to ourselves that our lives really are eternal, that we will be able to live to the full in this life. And then we really together will be able to transform the world. But meanwhile, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.